Welcome to the Undisputed Podcast. I'm your host, Jenny Taft. This podcast is a condensed version of today's episode of Undisputed, handpicked with the best segments and discussions. Skip, Shannon, let's go.
He trained the one and only Michael Jordan and some of the world's most elite athletes, and he's also got a new book out, Winning the Unforgiving Race to Greatness. We're now joined by the legendary Tim Grover. Thank you so much for being with us this morning, Tim. In addition to MJ, you trained Kobe Bryant and you attended the Hall of Fame induction ceremony this past weekend. What was your biggest takeaway from being there?
You know what? It was very bittersweet, but Vanessa did an unbelievable job. I mean, to be able to deal with all those emotions that everything was going on during that moment, she was flawless. She was absolutely flawless. But my biggest takeaway was to see, you know, my two biggest clients on stage, one there in person and the other being represented in spirit and everything, just to see them and know what the bond they actually had with each other. And for MJ to go out and do this per Vanessa's request, and just, you could see how he was emotional too and how he was trying to hold back his feelings during the whole thing. But just to see my two guys out there, just well-deserved on both of them. Mm.
Well said. So before I ask my first question, Tim, allow me to say I have read Winning. It is intense. It is powerfully written. It basically just grabs you by the throat and says to you, if you want to be Jordan-esque or Kobe-esque in whatever your endeavor in your life, that you have to basically dedicate your entire existence to the pursuit of winning. And one of the chapter titles stuck in my psyche, Winning Takes You to Hell, and If You Quit, That's Where You'll Stay. Is in hell. Yeah. So the point is, now we get back to Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant. I always thought that Kobe was the closest to Jordan in mindset, in killer will. But as you train both of these men, what key difference did you find between Kobe and Michael?
Well, this is what I always said. Kobe worked out harder. Michael worked out smarter.
Yeah.
All right. Kobe wanted to know every single detail. He wanted to know why the reps, why you were doing this exercise, why we're working out at this particular time, why am I eating this? He wanted to know every single detail. Why would I change the order of stuff? Just that Michael was like, hey, I hired you. I trust you. I don't want this to be my focus. Just if I question you, make sure you have an answer. Don't guess. If you don't know, go ask somebody and figure it out. But both of them extremely, extremely intense. With Michael, I could get him to stop. He knew when enough was enough. He's like, you know, this is what I need. My hardest transition with Kobe was getting him to stop. Was like, all right, your body needs time to recover. We got to stop doing this. You're actually working out you're working out too much. All right, we cannot shoot 1,000 shots today. We got to cut that in half. And that was a battle that we had all the going on back and forth. And it took us a while for him to build that trust in me. But Kobe really took off when he started to realize that, yeah, I need to actually do less. Mm.
Was that because Kobe was chasing Michael? Michael wasn't chasing anybody except Michael, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, he's just like, listen, Kobe's mentality was, I got to do more. I got to do more. I got to do more. Because if you feel like you're trying to close that gap in the chase, and if you feel like you're doing less, that gap in your mind actually widens. And I had to kind of convince him, hey, this is the way Michael did it. This is the way you want to be as close to him as possible. These are the things that he did. I'm not trying to tell you to do exactly the way he did it. But these are some of the things that we implemented in his career that actually allowed him to have extreme longevity and play at the highest level. Mm.
Do you believe that Kobe came to you because you trained Michael and Michael has had such great success and that was the path that he wanted to go along? And two-part question. And when an athlete comes to Tim Grover, what do you think that athlete is hoping to accomplish?
Well, Shannon, you are absolutely right. So in 2007, Kobe actually reached out to Michael and said, listen, I'm having a lot of issues with my knees. And he goes, do you got any recommendation? And Michael said, listen, this is not what I do, but I'm not using Grover anymore. He said, why don't you give him a call? So those were the two connections there. And it was funny because during when Michael was playing, he would always say, listen, I don't pay Grover to train me. I pay him not to train anybody else. You know, so that was his line. And then, so, you know, the relationship and the work ethic that MJ saw in Kobe, he said this would be a perfect fit. And he said, this is a perfect guy for you because he's not a yes person. He's not a starstruck individual. He's as messed up as you are in the head, just like I'm as messed up as my clients are. Why don't you give him a try? I flew out to LA. We talked about some things and he explained to me what was going on. He introduced me to the members of his personal performance team. And we made some adjustments there. And, you know, the results were two more championships and gold medals. Hmm. And the second part, you know what? You guys know this and you have this all the time. People will always say this. I'll do anything. But their definition of anything is completely different than my definition of anything. Mm-hmm. You know, it'd be like, you know, oh, yeah, I could do what you guys do. No, they can't. All right. No, they can't. So what is your definition of anything? So I would always, this is a test I give to all the athletes. We sit down, we talk, see what's going on. And then I'll say, I'll see you at 3:30. All right. I don't tell them a.m. or p.m. I don't tell them a.m. or very few show up. Well, they're like, they don't ask. So they automatically assume 3:30 p.m. I'm at 3:30 a.m. What else do you have to do? What's the most important thing in your life right now? Is it to get better? Is it to get your mindset right? Is it to pay attention to your craft? So they'll come in, they'll roll in about 3:30 in the gym. I'll still be there p.m. wise. And I'll say you're 12 hours late. You said you would do anything. So if you're willing to do anything, well, what was more important that you had to get done that you couldn't show up at this particular time?
So LeBron James is trained by Mike Mancias, who once upon a time was an intern of yours, a protege of yours.
Yes.
How impressed have you been with the job Mike has done with LeBron, who's obviously as durable a superstar as we have ever seen?
Mike's done an incredible job with him. I mean, if you think about it, you guys don't know this more than I will. This is probably the longest LeBron's ever been out before, you know, with this high ankle sprain, which actually wasn't caused by him, you know, stepping on somebody's foot or something that he did, you know, somebody else dove for the ball. They landed on his ankle and he turned. And this is what, his 17th, 18th year in the league? I mean, you got to give a testament to the way he takes care of his body, the way he invests in himself to keep himself healthy. And, you know, Mike gets a lot of credit for that. The one thing I don't understand is everybody's so shocked about, you know, oh, he invests over $1 million in his body. That's your craft. That's your craft. Shouldn't you be doing everything possible, all athletes out there? All right, you don't have to invest that much money if you don't have that kind of funding, but you should be investing as much in yourself with taking care of the machine that allows you to perform at the highest level.
The Last Dance, you saw that documentary last year. It was very prominent. You had a role in it. Is there anything that you learned watching The Last Dance, or is there anything that you would like to have seen added to The Last Dance?
You know what? It brought back a lot of memories to me of things that I had forgotten. Now, you know, I never worked for the organization. I was always independent to whoever my client was. So a lot of the locker room stuff I had heard through different conversations I had with Michael, Scotty, and Ron, but those things to really see what was actually going on in the inside was like, wow. But just the thing I took away from it is, you know, that last season, think about it. You going into your job, your performance, and on the first day they tell you whether you win the championship or you lose every game, you're not coming back. The coach is not coming back. The whole team is going to be dismantled. And to have that mindset and be able to pull yourself together and say, hey, those are the obstacles that I need to overcome and knowing that Scottie's not even going to be coming back for, you know, 30 plus games, how many individuals would you know would have just thrown it in? And Michael said, no, this is not the way this is going to end. This is going to end for me. That was one of my biggest things about it, just to see how he handled all that adversity that was thrown at him, that we all kind of knew what was going to happen, but was really didn't know until it actually did. But to see the relationship of how it really was with the general managers and the coaches and the different stuff that was going on behind the scenes. I knew what was going on with the teams. Everybody knew what was going on with Michael, Dennis, and all that other stuff. But some of the other stuff was just like, I was like, wow, I didn't know how deep it was.
Tim, let me ask you, wait. I mean, you said, Michael said, I'm not paying you to train me. I'm paying you not to train anyone else. And I remember when I would fly my massage therapist out to Atlanta, I had to take the whole book, Skip. So he was working Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So I had to buy all those clients. So for you, Tim, not that you just to have one client, whoo, that you got to really love that client, because that's taking, you know, arguably a lot of, you know, money and food off your table, because you got to specialize like, okay, this guy only wants me to train him, and I could be training him, and him.
Yeah. Yeah. For the first 3 years, it was just him. But listen, we all do things that we feel is best for us, what our definition and our language of winning is.
Right.
And that was the most important thing. I mean, I was fortunate enough, my first professional client was Michael Jordan. I mean, how many people get that opportunity? And whatever he needed, I had a support system with my parents during that time. So I was like, hey, listen, if this is what needs to be done, let's get it done. And the crazy part is, I never asked them, hey, we never discussed salary, we never discussed money, we never discussed any of that stuff. I knew the opportunity. When you look at Michael, everybody knows through all the years how underpaid he was to do his thing. But he was just, let me just focus on my craft. Let me just focus on my craft. Let me be the best player possible, and everything else will take care of itself. And I had the same similar mindset. Let me just be the best trainer out there with the highest profile client, and everything else will take care of itself. You gotta gamble on yourself. You gotta gamble on yourself.
So Tim, yesterday Russell Wilson announced that you will now be overseeing his training. He had a rough finish to the year last year. What's the first thing you could do to help bring him back to his Jordan-esque level?
Well, again, he had a performance. He has a very extensive performance team. And there was a lot of pieces that weren't fitting correctly. There were some individuals that weren't agreeing with what somebody else was doing. So it was, I'm brought in to kind of oversee all that stuff, eliminate the unessentials, put the things in the correct order, and, you know, get him in the best physical and mental condition possible for the endurance, for the long NFL season that's coming up. Obviously, I'm not privy to what happened. If I remember right, didn't they start 8-0? And then there was like a little, there was a significant downturn. Yeah. And I'm not privy to what happened during that time. At some point, I will be. But obviously, our job is to dethrone the GOAT. To perform as a highest, you know, that's where I'm brought in. I'm not brought in to finish second. I can control what I can control. He can control what he can control. But, you know, let's face it. We know who the number one guy is, the number one player in the NFL at that position. And our job is to take winning from him.
So in other words, Tim, you're a mercenary. You're a hired gun.
Hey, whatever you want to call it. Whatever you want to call it.
Wilson, lucky to have you. Tim, thank you so much for joining us today.
Good luck to you.
Thank you so much.
Seriously.
Listen, you know, I'm a huge fan of everybody, of you guys. I respect you. I love the debates that go back and forth. And, you know, people don't know. I go back to Skip when he used to write for a local newspaper and used to do the show called Cold Pizza.
I did.
And then Shannon, you and I, we used to be endorsers of EAS at the same time, but we didn't know each other back then.
Yep.
I love that, Tim. I will be reading your new book, Winning. I will also be waking up and working out. In theory, I will try to be with my friend Skip over here, because you got to commit to it. If you want to be the best, you got to do the best.
Exactly.
We appreciate your time, Tim. Thank you so much.
No mercy.